Joel Pollack is the front runner for the new US ambassador to South Africa. He's also been very outspoken in the past few hours, not surprisingly, after Cyril Ramaphosa led a group of four people who wrote an article in Foreign Policy magazine, which was highly aggressive towards the United States, almost doubling down in the fight against the White House. We'll find out from Mr. Pollack what his views are on the consequences. Thank you for joining us, Joel. You know South Africa well, having lived here, studied here as well, and having been following what's been going on in the last little while. For South Africans who don't really know how important the article that was published in Foreign Policy magazine is, can you just outline for us how seriously it would be taken?
Well, the article came out in the context of ongoing efforts to repair the relationship between the two governments. And one of the points that Donald Trump made in his executive order about 10 days ago was that South Africa had sided with various enemy nations or parties, including Iran and effectively Hamas, by taking Israel to the International Court of Justice after it had been attacked by the terrorist group. And in the context of all that, then Ramaphosa co-authors this article. He's the lead author. There are two other national leaders, one from Colombia, which has a left-wing government, and one from Malaysia, which has a history of anti-Semitic rhetoric from the government. And then there's a fourth co-author who is the representative of the Hague Group, which is a group that South Africa has formed along with a few other countries, including Cuba. The purpose of the Hague Group is ostensibly to strengthen international judicial institutions like the ICC and the ICJ, which South Africa has defied when it sees fit, but which it hopes to weaponize against Israel in particular. That's the obsession of the Hague Group. Oddly enough, the Hague Group cites various human rights principles and documents, none of which are honored by countries like Cuba, who South Africa is in this alliance with. But leaving the Hague Group aside, the article itself attacks Donald Trump's policy of imposing sanctions on the ICC. And if you look at the origins of that policy, it had nothing to do with Israel. The International Criminal Court is governed by the Rome Statute. Neither the United States nor Israel are parties to the Rome Statute. Neither one is. And yet the ICC began to consider investigations into U.S. personnel relating to conduct in Afghanistan. So in 2020, in the first Trump administration, the United States placed sanctions on ICC officials and investigators. When President Joe Biden took office, he reversed those sanctions, although in his executive order reversing the sanctions, he reiterated the point that the United States does not consider the ICC to have any jurisdiction over American personnel. This has been a sore point with the United States for quite some time. Donald Trump came back into office and restored the sanctions, and in this executive order, he did mention not just the effort by the ICC to investigate the United States, but also its effort to arrest, in fact, the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, as well as the former defense minister. And those arrest warrants came about in very questionable circumstances when the lead prosecutor at the ICC had been credibly accused of sexual misconduct, and then he pulled out these arrest warrants before consulting with the government of Israel and so forth. And essentially, Ramaphosa is saying in this article that they're going to arrest the Prime Minister of Israel. They're going to enforce the ICC warrants, and they go into the sanctions by the Trump administration against the ICC. And there's a portion of the article that actually likens Donald Trump to an apartheid leader or an authoritarian leader because of his suggestion for evacuating the population of Gaza and rebuilding it under U.S. control. All of that is against American foreign policy, against American national security interests, and it means that South Africa is now explicitly violating the terms of the Africa Growth and Opportunity Act, which specifies explicitly that countries that benefit from the act cannot operate in the international arena in a way that's counter to the United States, either in terms of foreign policy or national security, and also to the allies of the United States. But in this case, it really is not just about Israel. It's also about the United States and Donald Trump's focus on the ICC as a threat to the security interests of the United States because of the way it's conducted itself. So in the context of an effort to repair relations between the two governments, to come out with an article like this is raising the stakes significantly. And it's actually given the Trump administration an excuse, if it needed one, to formally kick South Africa out of AGOA and also to consider sanctions against Cyril Ramaphosa and the ANC for their conduct. And what's also striking about the article is the word Hamas and terror don't appear once in the article. The article is essentially a long attack on Israel, but it describes the ongoing war in Gaza, or really formerly ongoing because there's a ceasefire now that just ended its first phase. It describes the war as if it were some kind of unprovoked attack by the Israeli military against a defenseless Palestinian civilian population, leaving out the origins of the war, which were on October 7th, 2023, with a massive terror attack by Hamas terrorists against innocent Israeli civilians, for the most part. And the fact that that is completely missing, there's not even an attempt to deal with that as a problem that the argument might have to face, it really tells you that South Africa has gone off the deep end in terms of foreign policy on the Middle East, and not just in the Middle East, but more broadly. So this article really is a broadside against the Trump administration. The White House is aware of it. The White House is reacting to it. And I'm not exactly sure what the response is going to be, but there is a discussion of sanctions and other significant steps that may be taken, including with respect to AGOA, which, if you recall, Democrats also suggested that the then Biden administration look at when South Africa was seen to be supporting Russia in its invasion of Ukraine. So Ramaphosa is playing a very dangerous game, and I do think it'll have consequences.
What about these personal sanctions that you raised a moment ago? Are there any examples of how this has been imposed in the past and what could happen then to Ramaphosa and those close to him?
Well, there are a variety of different sanctions. I mean, if you look at the sanctions on the ICC, the prosecutors or the staff members of the ICC were prevented from entering the United States, traveling in the United States. Sanctions can go further. They can also look at the assets of senior government officials in South Africa. They can look at assets held by the ANC or transactions conducted by the ANC using international financial institutions. I mean, there are quite far-reaching sanctions that they could impose. You don't do this in the middle of a negotiation with the United States or really on the way to a negotiation. As I've been saying for several days when I've been asked in the South African media, how do we unravel this issue, this problem, this crisis? And the answer is you offer compromises and then you begin a discussion. This is the opposite of that. This is, in effect, throwing sand at the White House in a way that is designed, I think, to project an image of defiance, and it's exactly the wrong move. So I do think that it could end up with some financial repercussions for the ANC and senior officials, depending on which direction the White House wants to go.
An interesting point that Franz Cronier, who's one of our top political analysts here in South Africa, raised was he said that now that it's quite clear that Israel cannot be defeated militarily, it's almost like a Vietnam strategy where those enemies of Israel are working through different channels, through trying to get the hearts and minds, as it were, of younger people, including in the United States. And he says this could be one interpretation from the White House. Are you seeing it that, or do you think that there's credibility in that suggestion?
I think that's what people on the pro-Palestinian side believe. But the results tell a very different story. A poll came out today from Harvard University that reflects the results of previous polls, which is that 80% of the American public is firmly behind Israel. And 75% of the American public say that they want Hamas out of Gaza. So it's not having an effect. And if you look at the results on the ground, look at what's happened over nearly 18 months of war. Israel has destroyed Hamas for the most part. Israel has defeated Hezbollah in Lebanon and achieved a ceasefire there that's greatly to Israel's advantage. The Syrian regime, which was close to Iran, has been overthrown by rebels, and the Iranian regime can't keep the electricity on in the wintertime. And they're making noise about nuclear enrichment and so forth, but they have no air defenses. The United States or Israel could simply attack Iran's nuclear facilities, and Iran would not be able to do anything about it because they unwisely launched massive ballistic missile attacks against Israel, again without provocation, and launched them toward Israel's civilian population centers. And luckily, they didn't do much damage because Israel has extensive missile defense systems. But that gave Israel the opportunity to strike back and strike at Iran's air defense systems. The Biden administration restrained Israel from a more sweeping response and one that would more widely target the nuclear facilities. But this is a war that Iran and its proxies have lost. So why is South Africa weighing in on the losing side of a war? You know, this is a losing strategy. And it then raises questions about who's actually driving this policy. Is this being driven by Iran, Iranian money? Is it being driven by China, China's attempt to regain influence in the Middle East? China has largely been cut out of the Middle East. At the recent Riyadh summit, the Chinese were basically absent. Now, under Joe Biden, the Chinese did play a larger role. They did negotiate a kind of restoration of relations between Iran and Saudi Arabia, and that agreement happened in Beijing. So China definitely wants a larger role. But they have been elbowed out again. And one wonders if the South African government is playing into China's influence by doing this. But again, if so, they're playing a dangerous game and they're allowing South Africa to be a pawn in China's effort to exert hegemony over the world rather than acting as a truly non-aligned nation. And again, the signal is that there's no mention of Hamas or terrorism. I don't know how any democratic government, any free government, can take the position that Hamas's terrorism doesn't matter, or more explicitly in South Africa's arguments at the ICJ, that certain forms of terrorism are entirely justified, that it's acceptable to kill innocent people as long as you're doing it for the right reason. So I think South Africa is taking some very dangerous steps here, and I don't know if the South African public has been told why.
You are well aware that we have a government of national unity in South Africa. You may not be aware that the ANC's ranking or ratings in the polls have continued to slide. They're now down to about 32%. If, from the American perspective, you look at the government of national unity, if the leader of the team is making these pronouncements, do you then tar every member of the government of national unity with the same brush? Or indeed, is there any way that those opposition parties who are propping up the ANC's rule in South Africa should be taking a stronger line?
I don't know. But what I do know is that the representatives of other parties, I don't know if you can call them opposition parties because, as you mentioned, they're in the government of national unity. But I do know that representatives of the Democratic Alliance were in Washington this week, as were representatives of Solidarity and AfriForum, and they're making an effort to reach out. And I don't know exactly what positions they're taking because I'm not part of those discussions directly, but I have been informed about what's going on. And from my understanding is they've tried to present the best case for South Africa that they can, while also retaining their criticism of some of the policies of the ANC, with whom the DA at least is in government. So I do think they're trying to resolve the situation in a positive way, and they're doing the hard work. I mean, I give them credit for coming and talking to the Trump administration to the extent that they can. And I think that is probably going to result in a more targeted response from the Trump administration. So I think you may see that. But again, it's impossible to say at this point. If Ramaphosa keeps ratcheting up the stakes, I think anything is possible.
Talking about ratcheting up the stakes, South Africa took an unprecedented position at the United Nations in supporting Ukraine for the very first time against Russia, largely, it appears, because of the relationship now between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin, or perceived relationship. Is that also going to be noted?
I don't know. I think everything in that situation is in flux. You know, there are a lot of countries that voted with Russia for the first time. And there's been some internal criticism in the United States over that particular resolution. But I think what Trump is trying to do is to bring both parties to the table and he doesn't want to blow up that effort by attacking Russia at the United Nations. So it's almost as if the entire drama on the floor of the General Assembly is a bit of a distraction. So I don't know that people are paying close attention to it. I do think that South Africa's position will be noted, but it's not as if the United States is opposed to Ukraine. I mean, the United States is still supporting Ukraine, but what Trump is trying to do is to give Ukraine incentives to come to the table instead of doing what they did for 3 years, basically, under Joe Biden, which is to stick to maximalist bargaining positions. Both sides are going to have to give something up to reach peace. There is a stalemate. The front lines are not moving in either direction. And you're seeing a massive, massive loss of life on both sides. And those are circumstances historically that lend themselves to negotiation if both sides are willing to compromise. Again, there's an instructive lesson here, I think, for South Africa, which is that Zelensky and the Ukrainian government opposed Trump first as a candidate, now in some sense have criticized him as president. It doesn't go well when you do that. You have to work with the guy. And you can't hope to use the mainstream media or China as leverage against Trump. It doesn't work. What Trump wants is for people to negotiate in good faith. And that, I think, is what Zelensky is starting to do. And I think it's what South Africa needs to learn to do, or at least the South African government. But it's not doing it yet.
So negotiating in good faith will require a change in the position. Would that position be changed by targeted sanctions? And here, I guess one needs to also realize that the group, the family, as it were, that runs South Africa, and here you're talking about Ramaphosa, his brother-in-law, Patrice Motsepe, etc., are amongst the richest people in the country. They are billionaires in many times over. Would those sanctions extend to their personal wealth or their personal financial positions? And I guess I'm trying to just get a sense of what the stick could be.
Yeah, I would think so. And I think also the reason to do something like that, if I were advising the president, would be to win the South African public over to your side. You know, you've seen the effect of Doge, Elon Musk's effort in exposing some of the government waste. And that's got broad support in the American public, even if journalists have been critical of the way it's been done and there's a debate in the media about it. People generally are fascinated by what he's discovering. And I think that if you impose sanctions in a way that also exposes the overseas assets of people who have been misgoverning South Africa, I think the South African public would actually enjoy that and appreciate it, because South Africa is being robbed essentially by some of the people running it, not all. And I think people would like to know where that money is going and how it's being spent. And I think Donald Trump would actually make an alliance with the South African people, in a sense, to force change in the government.
Exposes the assets? How does that work?
Well, the way the United States Treasury works when it imposes sanctions, it's not just on assets that are physically or electronically in the control of the United States government or within U.S. borders. The U.S. Treasury has significant influence over international transactions. And that's how they imposed financial sanctions on Iran before those were unwound under the Obama administration in the run-up to the nuclear deal, which was not a really good deal. But anyway, that's how the sanctions worked. And that's how the sanctions have worked against Russia, Russian oligarchs, and so forth, Russia's exclusion from the SWIFT system. And, you know, Russia had alternatives. It went to China. But the assets of people close to the Russian government were then identified and in some cases seized. So I think those mechanisms still exist and can be deployed if put into motion.
And you'd be in favor of that?
I do think so, actually. I would, personally. But I'm not advising the president in that regard. I would be in favor of it. I think Ramaphosa is putting South Africa in a dangerous position. He's taking positions that are contrary to the interests of the United States. I believe they're also contrary to the interests of South Africa. They're certainly contrary to the interests of the Middle East. He is insisting on isolating Israel and sanctioning Israel and punishing and arresting Israeli leaders after Israel has defended its people from a horrific terror attack. You know, Ramaphosa's article came out just hours before Israel buried the Bibas family, the mother and two children, who were taken hostage in front of the whole world and then murdered. And when their remains were handed over, Hamas didn't even hand over the right corpse of the mother. They had a grotesque ceremony where they desecrated the bodies, essentially. They hung a sign on the mother's coffin that said she was arrested on the 7th of October as if she were some kind of criminal instead of an innocent civilian woman dragged from her home with her babies clinging to her. And that's the day on which Ramaphosa decided to launch this attack in the Foreign Policy Journal, stating that South Africa intended to pursue Israel. So I think that as long as South Africa is on the wrong side of that issue, which to me is a moral issue, I'm in favor of punitive actions that push South Africa away from that position. And I'm not the only person who feels that way. Donald Trump, in his first public cabinet meeting today, mentioned his outrage at the way Hamas had treated the Israeli hostages, the way that it returned some of the hostages dead and alive in horrific condition. He mentioned one of the young women who had been taken hostage, who is now missing two fingers on her hand because she shielded her face from a bullet that was fired at her. These issues are close to Donald Trump. They're also close to Elon Musk. Elon Musk visited Israel in the wake of October 7th. He toured the communities, such as Kfar Aza, which is a southern town that was absolutely devastated by the attacks on October 7th. So whether you agree or disagree with the position of the United States, the people who have been elected into power in the most recent election are taking the terror attack of October 7th extremely seriously. And Donald Trump has said that he's so incensed at the conduct of Hamas, which is the elected Palestinian government to some extent in Gaza, that he is actually now saying Israel can do whatever it wants. He's not interested in restraining them at all. Whatever they think is good, he's okay with. Now, Israel faces a different set of incentives because there are still 63 hostages inside Gaza, and Israel knows that if it goes back to war, it's risking the lives of the 24 or so who are thought to be alive. So it's a slightly different calculation, but Trump has basically said Israel has carte blanche, which is not what Biden said. And Hamas's behavior, which violates every international law, you know, you don't hear that. I mean, the whole article that Ramaphosa wrote is about international law and these international bodies and so forth. Not one complaint about the abduction of civilian hostages, which is a war crime. Not one complaint about the refusal to allow the Red Cross to visit the hostages, which is also a violation of international law. Not one complaint about the desecration of the corpses. Their concern about international law is only in one direction, and that is when it can be used as a weapon against Israel and the United States. So I think that as long as that's the orientation of the South African government, I think South African foreign policy is actually against the interests of the West and democracy and decency in general, frankly. So I would be in favor of whatever it takes to push South Africa toward a position that is, I think, more in line with South Africa's own experience, which is that if you want peace and progress, you suspend the armed struggle, you negotiate in good faith, and you don't attack civilians. There were violent acts against civilians, certainly, in the South African struggle on many different sides. But in general, the ANC held the moral high ground, and that was crucial to its ultimate success. That may seem like ancient history, but it still is an instructive example. And for some reason, the ANC is now giving Palestinians the opposite advice, which is to be absolutely brutal and to expect no consequences for that brutality and expect the other side, the side you've attacked and brutalized and raped and murdered and kidnapped, that side to face all of the consequences when they respond. I think that's actually immoral. I think it's corrosive of South Africa's own internal stability, but also of democracy and freedom in general and humanity. And I think there should be consequences for it, actually. Frankly, I do. Obviously, the other things that come into it, as I mentioned, Israel has a different set of incentives. Donald Trump has to weigh other things. But I think as long as the South African government remains on this path, and especially in a context where there's a need for compromise and there's a desire for discussion and negotiation, if South Africa shows a willingness to compromise, I think introducing the argument that Donald Trump is like an apartheid ruler and that Donald Trump is wrong to sanction the ICC and that Israel should be absolutely pursued for alleged violations of international law. We won't mention what occasioned its war in Gaza. We'll just accuse Israel. Doing that in this context at this time is potentially disastrous, I think, for relations between the two countries, certainly for South Africa's participation in AGOA, and perhaps for the personal financial situation of the leaders of the ANC itself, because you're practically inviting Donald Trump to do something to respond now that they've gone after him personally, and now that they've explicitly opposed something that the United States has identified as a core national security interest, which is the idea that American soldiers will not be subject to the jurisdiction of these multilateral bodies to which the United States has not acceded. You know, you don't have to sign the Rome Statute. Countries don't have to agree to these treaties. If you don't agree to be governed by the rules of the International Criminal Court, it has no jurisdiction. But now Ramaphosa is saying it should have jurisdiction, not just over Donald Trump and the United States and American soldiers, but also over the Israeli prime minister, whom Ramaphosa thinks he can arrest. Well, let's see what happens. If the ANC thinks they can arrest foreign leaders, then let the ANC finances come into the open, and let's see what international criminal bodies do about that. I think if you want to apply that standard to the Israeli prime minister, let's see it applied to the South African government.
Joel Pollack is the senior editor at Breitbart and the frontrunner for the next U.S. ambassador to South Africa. I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.